Accession number 22086, Real 1.
Colonel Shakespeare, Real 1. Can you tell me if there was a tradition of military service in your family?
Yes, indeed. My grandfather joined the Gurkhas in, I think it was 1886. And my father followed him in 1907. I joined in 39, 40. And my son in 69. So four generations in the same regiment. And I think that's unique.
When you were growing up, did you ever consider any other career?
Yes, I wanted to get in the RAF. I loved flying. But when my brother failed to get into the regiment, I decided, literally, just for the exam, that I'd come to Sandhurst and not Cranwell.
When you were growing up, going to school, did you do any pre-military training?
No, not other than at school, OTC, and no.
Do you remember what you did in the OTC at school?
No. Field days with firecrackers and pencils, and we had no weapons worth talking about. Dummy. Nothing at all. What, 36, 37, 38?
Do you think you learned anything useful in the OTC at school?
No. They were fun.
You were growing up between the wars. Was there a time when you were growing up when it occurred to you that there was likely to be another great conflict?
No, I think I was far too interested in school and playing games, and I wasn't a bit worried until possibly 38, 39, and even then one looked upon it as a going to be fun almost, nothing terribly serious, no.
Did you have any ideas about how another major war might be fought?
I'm afraid not, no. Not then, no.
Do you remember if it occurred to you that you might end up fighting the Italians? Italy might be an enemy.
Didn't think of that. I think what I did realise, I thought the Great War, this loss of life and trenches, is, funnily enough, an aspect of war I never studied because I didn't believe it was a sensible way to fight. And I have never really studied the Great War for that reason. I've always studied the war of manoeuvre, Genghis Khan, and that sort of business. Partly, I think, because my godfather, who is a very erudite general, was always on the mobility side.
Carry on.
No, I was going to say, surprise was the one word that he always said. And in the Great War, it's very difficult to have surprise when you're entrenched. If you can surprise the opposition, half the battle is won.
You mentioned taking the examination, the entrance examination. Mm-hmm. You remember what that was like? What you had to do?
Oh, I suppose one was crammed for it. it was quite simple. I think I passed in quite high. In fact, I passed in high enough to get to Cranwell, which had a slightly higher standard, I think, than Sandhurst. Not high enough for Woolwich. And I didn't want to be a gunner or a sapper. But as far as I recall, I was number 15, I think.
What happened to you when you arrived at Sandhurst?
Your feet didn't touch the deck. Dressed in overalls and gore-blimey cap and left, right, left, right, left, right, left. And you're treated like dirt by everyone. Probably quite good for you.
Was the discipline a shock to the system, or was it something
No, I took it as a matter of course. Kept a sense of humour, I think. It's no good getting worked up about it.
When did you actually come into the academy, or the college as it was then? When did you join the college here?
It was January 39, that's right. We had one full term and half the next term, because I left in November.
Do you remember what you studied while you were at Sandhurst and what you learned?
Car maintenance, I think, is one of the things I remember more. There was a very dull military history, very dull indeed. Apart from that, I don't know. I really can't remember. I think I learnt less at Sandhurst than I did at school.
Do you remember the outbreak of war and what?
Yes, digging trenches at the back of their new buildings, listening to the radio.
Did the outbreak of war come as a surprise at the time?
Well, no, not really. No, it was looming.
And what happened to you then after your term and a half at the Royal
We left, and the Indian Army, I was accepted for the Indian Army. There were, 20 or 30 of us, I think. We went across France in November to Marseille and got on the HMT Ettrick, which was brand new, and sailed for Bombay. We had on board Lady Wavell and two daughters, and the old man himself met us at Alexandria and walked up the gangplank. That's when I first saw him. I think he was in the middle of five campaigns at that time.
All the way around
yes,
the clock.
Yes. Quite extraordinary. Marvellous man.
Did you get any impression of France when you were going across it?
Sorry?
Did you get any impression of France when you were driving across it?
Oh, no. No, we went at night across, so the Gare du Nord at night, and then night time. No, I can't remember daylight at all. It was practically night all the way.
You sailed on the HMT Ettrick across the Mediterranean. Were there any events on the voyage, or was it a peaceful passage?
No, absolutely. No worries at all.
Were you part of a convoy or sailing as an individual ship?
I think we had some escorts in the Mediterranean. But once through the canal and on, there were no worries, because Japan hadn't done anything.
And the Italians weren't involved?
No.
Was this the first time you'd been out of England, or had you been abroad?
Well, I was, up to the age of five, I was in India more than I was in England. I was born in Shillong and came back in when I was about two, and then out to Assam again, and then back when I remember my fifth birthday was the day after we arrived back, and since from 1925 to 39, I was in England the whole time.
What happened to you when you arrived in India?
We were sent to Belgaum, which is an officer's training school in south central India, or towards the south, to finish off for 3 months. My godfather was the director of military training in India, and he reckoned that Sandhurst cadets needed a little bit of tactical knowledge put into them In fact, the first 2 months, complete waste of time. They tried to teach us how to drill again.
Was the drill
and the last month was really quite fun.
Was the drill at Belgorn the same as you'd learned at...
This is guards drill here, and there was line infantry. Can't remember who the drill instructors were. But the officers were Indian Army, Gurkhas, Raj, Rif, all good regiments.
When you'd done your 2 months of drill, you said you had to have some tactical training. Do you remember what was
there? It wasn't 3 months of drill. The first month or two was drill. And the aim of the exercise was to do more tactics and get sort of au fait with stuff that perhaps we hadn't done here, because our course at Sandhurst had been shortened considerably. So, the last month or two at Belgorm were great fun.
Do you remember what sort of tactics they taught you?
No idea at all.
What level did it go up to? Did you?
Oh, I think platoon company level, that's all.
Company.
Nothing, not big stuff, no.
How was it taught? Did you have field exercises for the most part, or was it done by instruction in the classroom or with sand table or with other devices?
No, I think we got out in the field quite a lot, but my memory is very dim of that period. Sort of weapon training, yes. Minor tactical exercises, I suppose, but really all I can think of is...
You were saying that at Belgorm the tactical training was up to platoon and company level, and I was asking if you did any sand table exercises or...
Oh, we must have done, yes, but I can't remember. Must have done.
Do you remember if you did toots? Did you do tactical exercises without troops?
Yes, we must have done all that, but it didn't leave an impression.
It didn't make an impact.
No.
What happened then after you passed out through Belgorm and you'd done your
Joined the regiment. In fact, the colonel of the regiment came down and interviewed four of us, I think, and said we all all had fathers in the regiment. And he said, well, I don't know if there's room, you might join. And we were all rather sort of worried. But eventually three of us did join the same regiment.
Had there ever been any question in your own mind about which regiment you were going to join?
No, none at all. I wanted to join my father's and grandfather's regiment. And I had a godfather, you see, who was colonel of the regiment anyway.
That brings a certain advantage.
I think so.
What happened when you arrived at the regiment? How were you received on first arrival?
I can't remember. I arrived by train and Dehradun station, and whether there was... I suppose there must have been somebody to meet the train. But I remember reporting to the adjutant and being told one or two things. He said, we expect you to be on time, and if you're not, and there's no reason, you'll take the next train out, or words to that effect, and... that's all.
What did they do with you then once you'd arrived? Were you given a platoon?
No. In a Gurkha battalion, you see, all platoon commanders are Gurkhas. There was a double company. They'd just come down from the frontier, and there was a senior major who was commanding a double company, and you were the company officer. The second in command was a Gurkha. The next thing that happened was the company commander went off on a senior officer's course, probably to Belgorm, which is where that was too. And you were left as a subaltern of no years standing, not knowing the language, to run the thing. Naturally, if you were sensible, you left it in the hands of the senior Gurkha officer.
Was the Gurkha officer happy to take over?
Yes, he ran the, as far as I can remember, the program was week to week. For the first 2 weeks, he said what he was going to, and then he, very charming manner, said, Saab, what are we going to do next week? To me, which meant that I had passed and was roughly capable of running things.
Do you remember what you said to him?
No. I said, thank you very much. Delighted.
What was the regiment or the battalion actually doing then?
They were training. They'd just come from the frontier and were presumably regrouping and training for active operations elsewhere. No one knew where. You must remember that at that time, the Indian Army, you had to pass your Urdu exam, your lower standard, and if you couldn't pass that, you were thrown out. So apart from learning Urdu, you had to learn Gurkhali, though the Gurkhas also had to speak Urdu, and if you wanted to, you went on to the higher standard, which I did. So all the time you were learning exams as well as being a soldier.
How did you go about learning those languages?
A splendid character called the Munshi, who is the teacher. And the time he came was 2 to 4 on every afternoon. Of course, the worst time in any hot country is you'd fall asleep just like that. Very difficult. But it wasn't a problem for me because the first language I spoke must have been Hindustani. I had been born in Assam, in Shillong, my ayah used to speak to me, and I think I spoke Hindustani before I could speak English almost, and it didn't worry me.
What were the living conditions like at Dehradun when you...
Oh, perfectly all right. I mean, very pleasant. We all had... There were about 3 officers sharing a bungalow, you know, a bed and a bathroom, a bed sit and a bathroom. That's all. I mean, no long baths or anything. You know, tubs over 10 gallons.
What sort of routine day did you have? Presumably you were working a routine.
Oh, very early, 6 o'clock. And then, as I say, in the afternoon,
language
and the men went on and did interior economy or whatever you like to call it. And then possibly night exercises, night work.
Was there a lot of emphasis on night operations at that time?
Night operation? Quite a bit, yes. The Gurkhas are, well, the Indian Army, their eyes at night are rather better than ours.
Do you remember what you based your tactical training on? Were you using standard Indian Army or British Army pamphlets for the basis of the training?
I can't remember. I suppose they came from British Army pamphlets. I can remember later on, when I was teaching the 3-inch mortar, it was all British Army translated into Hindustani. That was later on, but I can't remember what the pamphlets were for ordinary sort of company exercises and battalion things. I think field service regulations rings a bell for me.
Yes.
Field service regulations.
I mean, was the training at the individual level or was it collective training?
It was the lower level. We did occasional battalion exercises. I remember one very hot day having too much in my pack and suffering. Put in a couple of bottles of beer and I was too tired to drink them.
Were route marches a normal thing?
Oh, yes.
How often a week would you go on a route
march? Oh, once a week at least, as far as I can recall, yes. It was a good march once a week.
What sort of distance would you cover on this weekly?
I can't remember. All I recall is that sometimes the company commander in front, standing about 6 foot, and then a line of little chaps, and you at the back, 6 foot. And all the Gurkhas about 5 foot 5.
Was it a young company? How old were these Gurkha soldiers in your company, do you think?
Difficult to say. I think some of the Gurkha officers would have had about 20 years service, or 23, 4. Recruits, I couldn't tell you. I did fairly soon. I was transferred to the training depot, and I had, I think it was 70 recruits to train for the battalion.
What was their standard when they arrived? What condition were they in?
Oh, they were fit. For recruitment, they had to reach a certain standard of fitness. And then, of course, from there on, you had to teach them everything, you know, where getting used to boots and marching and weapon training, I think, was probably the most important part. A lot of drill. I remember one occasion where our speed of marching is 140 to the minute, and I had a metronome, exactly 140 minutes, and then the commanding officer came across and said, "What the hell's that funeral march? Get it going!" He'd obviously had a bad Saturday night or something, and so I had to clock it up a bit, but there we are. No, a certain amount of that, but mainly weapon training, I think, was...
This was their initial individual training.
Oh, yes.
How long did that take? How long did it take to transform a raw recruit into a trained man?
About 6 to 9 months, I think.
What could they do at the end of that 6 to 9 months training? Soldier?
They all, in theory, had to be marksmen. Well, I can tell you the story of it later on when I was in Italy. And the recruits came. The first thing I did, if you had a moment out of the line, is to put up empty tobacco tins at 30 yards and get them to shoot at those. And I found that a lot of people couldn't hit a tobacco tin at 30 yards. So back would go, "They're not marksmen." That was much later, 2 or 3 years later. But I reckon there was a lot of range work, and most of them were class one shots. I myself, I liked shooting. I was always a marksman. I found no difficulty. And in those days, it was the foresight and the the back sight. In 1942, they brought the aperture sight in. And that, for the Gurkha, was much easier. He shot much better with the aperture sight than the old open foresight.
Do you have any idea of why that was?
No. All I can tell you is that when I was at Sorga as an instructor in 1941-2, we got the aperture sight, and we had the King's Medalist as a Gurkha there in my regiment, and we asked him, rather foolishly, we asked him to test it out, various sizes of aperture, and he scored bulls with everything. We should have asked an ordinary chap to test out the various sizes, but he said it was easier to get the foresight in the middle with an aperture than it was with the U. I don't know.
Do you remember spending a lot of time on the ranges with them?
Do
you remember spending a lot of time on
the ranges? Oh, yes, yes. I used to get very fed up with it. I hated... I suffered from, I think they used to call it glass jaw, boxing. Any thumping on the jaw, I used to get a headache. And, of course, shooting, I always get a headache. And even sort of standing on the range, not firing myself, I'd always get headaches. an awful lot of time. Classification shooting, yes.
Presumably you weren't short of ammunition or
Not 303, no.
What other weapons did you have at that time? Did you
The ordinary Lee Enfield rifle, and before the Bren gun was a Vickers Bertha, it was called, the VB, which is very similar. And then, of course, the Bren gun came in. And the medium machine gun, MMG. And there were no mortars in those days.
But I think you were concerned with the introduction of the mortar.
Later on, yes. I was sent on a company weapons course to Sorgo, which was the infantry school. It used to be the old cavalry school, and I finished my course there. Some reason I got a distinguished, and I was whipped back. Not to teach company weapons, but to teach a 3-inch mortar, which I'd never seen. Well, I had seen one in the old building at Sandhurst, what is now the Indian Army room.
Apart from the 3-inch mortar, what were these weapons that you'd learned, the company weapons?
Oh, the company weapons were, the rifle, 36 grenade. Some interesting moments with those. Not a company weapon, the medium machine gun, which was a platoon weapon, machine gun platoon. And the VB.
How did the VB differ from the Bren?
I can't remember now. I think it was so similar that it was almost the same. Similar, when going into immediate action, change magazines, stoppage, all those sort of business. I think they were almost identical, but memory now is no good.
What did you think of the 3-inch mortar once you met it?
The 3-inch?
Yes.
Oh, it's a marvellous weapon. I thought it was one of the best battalion commander's weapon there was. But it took quite a time to learn, teach in Hindustani. I think I started with a class of 5 students, and I had a Pathan Jamadar and might have been a Sikh Havildar to teach my squad with one mortar, the only mortar in India that was. And slowly, slowly, they started coming in, and eventually, after 2 years, when I eventually left, I had 28 mortars, 28 squads, and some 210 chaps of course. And it was, I think, looking back on my service, probably one of the most interesting and difficult jobs I had, but interesting and satisfactory jobs, teaching these chaps. They were so keen. And messages to come down from GHQ, why are the Japs better than the German mortars? And the simple answer, our maximum range was 1,600 yards. Theirs was 3,000. And, of course, they'd had them for yonks, and we didn't. I did once give a demonstration of firing, instead of 6 secondaries, putting in 12 to get a bit of extra length. But that was very hit and miss. I then worked out a demonstration of firing 6 mortars on one target together, having range with one. And the brigadier said, you'll never fire more than 2 mortars on a target. It'd be a waste of ammunition. My idea being that 6 bombs landing together would get more casualties than 6 following each other, which is obvious. All I can say